And let's go ahead and say hi to Mike Lefebvre, who's on the line right now. He's with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, as promised this morning. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good morning. Outstanding. How are you, sir?
You're outstanding. I figured you'd be all ticked off and mad today.
Today is my Super Bowl. They're introducing a budget and a tax. This is my Super Bowl. I'm not necessarily mad. I'm just busy.
Oh, there you go. So this is your time to get in the field and fight it out.
Yeah, it's my busiest time of year. So I'm too busy to be upset. I'm just examining everything in the most detail I can.
Oh, I imagine. So there's been a lot to examine, too, what we're talking about right now, as a matter of fact.
Yes, from the state of the state through yesterday and, of course, today with the expected announcement of a new budget with higher spending and, of course, more taxes and different taxes.
Yeah, some new kinds that that I hadn't expected, although I've been told that they've tried to do, we were talking about the taxes on services. I've been told that they tried to do that before in Michigan and failed.
The idea has been floated many times, but it's part of the overall opposition to taxes, I think, for the reason that it's failed, not necessarily because taxing services per se is a bad idea, although it's been tried in other states and they've actually repealed it in Florida. They implemented sales taxes on services, and while people reacted with great hostility as soon as they started seeing the extra bill being rung up, and they were quickly repealed.
Yeah, because you definitely don't miss a notice on that. And I talked about this earlier with State Representative Kevin Elsenheimer, mm-hmm. is that people don't understand. I shouldn't say that. I'm betting that people do understand it. That's probably one of the reasons it isn't going to happen. But when the governor gets on there and says, well, this is going to raise $1.5 billion for us, she's not just talking about the extra 2 cents per dollar when you get your hair cut, which is the example they use to make it sound like it'd be cheap. I mean, I want to talk about, Mike. Every time when they do these business-to-business transactions, businesses are going to raise their prices to compensate because business can't lose money or they won't be in business.
Right. At the end of the day, it's the consumer investor that ends up paying the bills.
Yeah.
They pay the bills of government, and that's why the Mackinac Center always weighs in with ideas to suggest reform, either to eliminate programs or to change the way we provide them to save money. One we've recommended for years was, for instance, devolving state police road patrols down to the less expensive county sheriff. The service still gets provided. It just gets provided at a lower cost. In fact, it would save us $65 million a year.
And I know that's one of the things we've talked about before in here, and I want to go over some of those with you right now. But I want to ask you a question just real quick, because you've been studying these kind of proposals over the years, probably for quite a while, I imagine. And with that in mind, let me throw something that I have said earlier today, and as a matter of fact, I think I said it just a few minutes before you came on, was talking about, doesn't it seem like, and because that every time a cutesy name comes with a proposal, that you know you're in trouble? here we are, the governor's two-penny plan. Doesn't that sound wonderful? It's only going to cost 2 pennies for all this. That sounds just, I just want to hug myself in anticipation of that. I mean, that's the feel-good stuff they're trying to do. And every time I see a cutesy name that's behind a government program, I grab my wallet and run because I know there's trouble coming.
Greg, politics is theater. I hate to say it, but all too often, politicians need to sell these ideas, and they do it by putting the best face forward. You know, people have been running for public office for thousands of years, a couple thousand years at least, and so they've honed their craft down to what could be considered a science. And part of that science means coating everything in velvet.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the difference is, I think they know when a good plan is put out that doesn't seem that is just a good plan on its own merit and it's going to be obvious. It doesn't have a cutesy name. I used the example of World War II. What did we call the rebuilding of Europe? It was the Marshall Plan. That didn't have a cutesy. They didn't have the feel good huggy plan to rebuild Europe. I mean, you didn't hear anything like that. But
or did they need community hearings where they would go and put on the show or the act in communities around and have listening events where they got feedback from the public? I'll tell you what, I have a lot of friends who worked in constituent services for politicians, and they've repeatedly told me that once they make the decision inside, what people, what ideas are shared with them in public or through letters or telephone calls, rarely get paid attention to in great detail.
So once they've made up their mind, that's it, huh?
Well, yeah, they craft their own plan, and we do elect them to be leaders in that regard, but they rarely let letters they get from constituents, and of course the lengthy papers with everybody's signatures scare them. What has scared them in the past and what may scare them again is these grassroots tax groups. For instance, when Governor Blanchard hiked income taxes by 38%, someone sent him the shirt off his back, literally mailed him a shirt. And that started this huge process of instituting a recall effort, which overturned the Senate and put it in the control of the Republicans for the first time. So it was quite an impact that they had, and this may happen again.
You know, it is amazing how that happens. I remember Indiana had a big issue that they weren't fixing potholes, because this was back in the 70s. They were having money troubles, and they weren't putting any money in the roads. And so what people started doing is they started planting the tree saplings inside of the big potholes. It just woke up one day, and all of a sudden there were these trees like all over the road because they were just planting them. So I think those goofy things, they sound goofy at first, but I mean they really do add up.
They can sum up the message or the mood of an entire state with one simple act. It's quite remarkable the creative things people come up with.
Yeah, it really is. Well, the governor, 2% tax on all businesses that are all, she calls them business-to-business transaction, but anything that's not a hard good gets that. How long, let's play this out for a second and tell me what you think. I mean, how long are they going to be able to keep a 2% sales tax on service and a 6% sales tax on everything else before the excuse starts saying, well, it's unfair not to have the same sales tax for everybody. You know, I'm waiting, you know, if this would go through, that's going to be your next step in a couple of years.
Government has an insatiable appetite for revenue. Someone once said that government will always expand into the resources available to it, but then it's not satisfied after that. It wants more. There are built-in incentives for the state to grow because the benefits of government spending are targeted in very narrow fashion, and they develop these special interest groups that live and die for them. However, the cost of those decisions are dispersed across a wide body of individuals. And very often, it might cost you 30-some cents to write a letter of complaint about your taxes, which would be more than it would cost you to pay for the new tax. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's difficult to herd cats, you might say, and get taxpayers riled up about particular expenditures. But it's happened in the past, and it could happen again.
Yeah, well, this is a big one all at once, so, I mean, you've got to wonder if it's going to grab people's attention.
Yes, and what's remarkable is that just 2 days ago, despite our economic woes and the obvious budget deficit, the governor went and offered 20 new proposals to expand the state, some small, some big. And I thought that was unusual. You'd think that in a time like this, she'd stand up and say, look, the till is empty. In a couple days, I'm going to ask you for more money, so I'm not going to offer any new proposals to make government bigger than it already is.
Are you familiar with the Hancock Amendment that's been out in Missouri several years now?
Missouri, no, it doesn't sound familiar.
You ought to take a look at that. I think somebody ought to be putting their mindset toward that. I'm using that as an example. There's other amendments like this. Basically, what it boils down to is the legislature nor the governor can pass tax increases without putting it before a vote of the people, period. I think that would help this state a lot, something like that.
Yeah, and other states have what might be called a taxpayer bill of rights, where if you want to raise money above a certain level, it requires a special vote of the people. In Colorado, before last November, I believe, they could only hike spending equal to the increase in inflation plus population. So if inflation and population increased in Colorado by 3%, the state legislature was only allowed to spend 3% above the previous year. And that provided Colorado with a lot of benefits. But it actually got tweaked last November by voters in a very narrow vote because there was something very special in this particular constitutional amendment. If there was a recession and they had to cut spending, that ratchet went down, and they had to start from that new lower level when they wanted to increase spending again by 3% by inflation plus population. And so the spending lobbies got involved because they wanted more money, and the voters actually approved a tweak to the amendment, so now they can get more money.
Oh, boy. Somebody sold out. Somebody sold that, I guess.
Yeah, there's constant tension there. There's the tax consumers versus the tax producers. Those of us in the private sector produce the taxes through efficient efforts to create products people want to buy. And then there's the tax consumers who want a piece of that that revenue for whatever they happen to have an interest in.
Mike, I've got a news break I've got to take right now. Can you hang on just a little bit?
Of course.
When we come back, we've went over these before, but I want to give you an idea again of some of the proposals that Mike at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy has presented. Mike LaFave is with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, and I've got weather. Well, it's myself and Michael Fay from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy as we chat with him this morning on WMPN and WMKT. Let's go ahead and go over and say hi to him. Mike, welcome back, sir. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It's good talking to you this morning. Mike, I had mentioned something about this whole thing, and I wanted to get your thought as far as the two-penny tax.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I don't think this is going to pass the Senate, do you?
Actually, it's funny you should ask. No, I don't. Normally, I don't make predictions, but this one just doesn't seem like it's going to have the legs that are necessary. Among colleagues yesterday, I suggested that there might be a proposal to hike the income tax temporarily, not make it a permanent thing, just to sell it as a package that would get us through this, you know, brief rough patch, you might say, of the current state and the deficit and the one expected for next year. But that was not floated. If this one goes down, I'm going to bet that the temporary income tax hike might be an alternative that gets mentioned.
Will they vote for that? I mean, with 64%, according to the latest poll, of the state saying, do not raise my taxes to cut this budget deficit.
Right, I know that. But I couldn't tell you how the legislature is going to vote on this. I just think that their promise of a temporary income tax hike might be more palatable than this particular plan. And it might be more palatable to legislators who don't necessarily want to cut the state budget because it affects their very vocal special interest groups that receive money from particular government programs, large and small, by the way. Even the offering of the smallest possible cuts, the seemingly least troublesome, or the ones that most should obviously be clipped, generate very hostile responses from the people who would no longer see their government revenue.
You know, interestingly enough, what might actually force a state income tax temporary increase like that, too, would be this. I think this whole thing about a 2% tax on services is nothing but a trap that the governor's trying to set for the Republicans. And I say that with this in mind. Think about it a second. Tell me if you think this has some legs or if you think I'm full of it. I'll take either way and not be offended. But I think the governor knows this thing is not going to pass. I think she knew it when she put it together, and I think she's waiting for it not to. And I think when it does, remember she said in the State of the State address, she did something that nobody expected, and that is she drew the line and says, I will not raise more taxes on school or cut schools more. Will not, period. Boom. Over. Now, with that in mind, when she comes back to the public after this 2% doesn't pass, and she blames the conservative movement and says, well, it's their fault, I'm sorry, I said I wasn't going to do it, but that was based on my wonderful two-penny plan, and I was going to make everybody feel good and hug each other and raise all this revenue for schools, but now we have to cut it because they wouldn't pass my plan, so I couldn't.
Well, my hunch is that that's exactly why the GOP offered up a plan first. They offered their own plan, which had cuts in it and a new form of business taxes that would replace the single business tax, solve that problem. For them, it's a problem, and hopefully balance the budget. And I think that's how they would counter. Or they would say, we need to restructure government more, and here's our own plan. How it shakes out is anyone's guess, because if they want this new tax to help cover this fiscal year's deficit, they have to move by the end of March. And state government is notoriously slow to act.
Oh, all government moves at glacier speed, I heard a congresswoman once tell me.
True enough.
So it's going to be interesting to see what they can do to cover the shortfall that they've ran into, even. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they're not allowed to take out loans or anything, are they? They have to have a balanced budget, isn't that correct?
Well, there does. We cannot run an annual deficit. There must be a balanced budget by law. There's no two ways around that. So it's going to happen. The question is how.
Now, can the dumb question, some states don't allow this. Does Michigan allow the sale of bonds or basically borrowing to make that happen? Are they allowed to do that?
Well, state and local units of government can sell bonds, but I don't see that happening for a temporary covering of a state deficit. We have to have things in line. Revenues have to equal expenditures constitutionally. There's no way around it.
What do you think is going to end up happening here? Are they going to be, is the budget going to end up being cut? Is we're going to see revenue increases, basically taxes, or a little bit of both?
I have a feeling that they're going to give us a little bit of both. I hope that they don't, because there are so many opportunities out there to balance the budget without raising taxes that they'd really let a billion-dollar opportunity go by them if they don't use this to restructure government in its entirety.
And I'm going to ask you about that as soon as we get back from weather on the other side. I do want to hear, they want to go over that list with you again. It's really interesting. Let's do that talking with right now. He is with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. And, Mike, you have, as I think we went over before, had some interesting ideas. And we've got about 15 minutes. I'm going to let you take the rest of the time and present some of these things that reminding the legislature where they should actually be thinking about cutting.
Terrific. Thank you. For years, the Mackinac Center has been making recommendations on how to make government more efficient and effective, how to save money and improve services. In fact, in 2003, I published the largest study we've ever written on the state budget. I actually read every single line item of the state budget and went through it.
Boy, how was that therapy after you're finished? Wow.
It took the therapy was longer than actually writing the study.
I'm sure.
But I am blessed in that I love public policy, so I volunteered for this, and I'm glad I did, because it was a fascinating read. You know, budgets aren't just about numbers. They're about people, and people are affected on both sides of this of the spending and taxation equation. Well, this study that we did was called Recommendations to Strengthen Civil Society and Balance Michigan State Budget. And every recommendation we made came with an explanation of why we what it was and why we should cut or privatize or reform certain aspects of state government. And my colleague, Jack McHugh, recently created a 700-word version of this that would basically save $2 billion in revenues, resources for the state to redeploy without, so we could avoid raising taxes. And he even added some new ones. And I'd like to go through some of those that are on our website that my colleague Jack McHugh has authored. The biggest one being adopt the Hay Group report. This was not our specific recommendations, though we had many that paralleled it. The Hay Group report was about rationalizing public school health insurance, just public school health insurance, which included requiring copays and being part of preferred provider networks. The estimated savings from those types of changes, just changing the health care packages for public school employees, $420 million. That's one change. Second of all, and that's, I'd like to contrast that with some of the ideas we have that are smaller. I'm not sure if you know this, but the state just last week sponsored a swine quiz bowl. They've been doing
it
every year through their, I think it's their extension line item, which is part of 4-H.
How does a swine quiz bowl work?
Well, actually, they bring in kids who are interested in agriculture and farming from around the state that that are basically of high school age, and they put them through a quiz ringer, asking them things like how long is the period of gestation for a pig before it's born, what consumer products can be developed from pigs in slaughter, not just, you know, bacon, but I think the answer was actually linoleum products.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Oh, yeah.
Why couldn't private business? I mean, there's plenty of agriculture businesses that probably would have loved to attach their name to that. Why did the state have to do that?
Indeed. Well, as we started this program, I mentioned that the government tends to expand into the money that's available to it, and everybody seems to have their own good ideas. Some of them wind their way through the legislature and get subsidies. This is was sponsored by 4-H, which I think a few years ago got $3 million general fund subsidy. So I like to ask legislators when I'm talking to them that you haven't even cut or tried to cut this one item suggests that you're not really serious about trying to balance the budget before reaching into our pockets to pay the bills of government. There are other things. We still own a state ski area in the UP. We own a motel lodge. All of these could be sold off. And those are some of the smaller items we've recommended. We've also recommended, of course, devolving duties from the state police to the county sheriffs to save $65 million a year. We've recommended eliminating economic development programs such as the newest 21st Century Jobs Fund. You know, I did a study of our economic development agencies, wrote a short history of them. Every governor, back to Kim Sigler, has created their own department or program in the name of economic development to diversify the economy. And I emphasize diversify because every single governor has actually used that word, including our own governor in the last address. I think she used the word diversify 20 times or something like that. So it's they're all rallying under the same flag. But if these programs worked, we would be fully diversified by now.
Yeah.
And we're becoming diversified by default, by the way. I'm not sure if you know this, but the Mackinac Center was the first to report that 2006 marked the first full year that there are now more total government employees working in Michigan than total manufacturing employees working in Michigan.
Wow, that is frightening.
That's federal employees, state employees, local employees, public university employees, all working in Michigan now exceed those in manufacturing. So we obviously need to do something. There's also competitive contracting for, in prisons. You know, the Rio Grande Foundation report out of New Mexico found that if 5% of prisoners are placed in privately managed prisons or using their savings rates, we could save about $192 million, and that's a very conservative figure. I pegged it higher in the past, but we're just trying to be very conservative with our estimates.
Let me stop you on that just for a second and throw a thought. When I spoke to State Representative Gary McDowell, and I don't have the figure in front of me, so I'm hoping it'll jar a memory in yours. He had mentioned that the one state prison that we had was actually the most expensive prison that Michigan had. It was costing more money to run that one for the state than any of the other prisons when we were doing that. Is there any truth to that?
I don't believe so. I've heard that, and that was the logic behind it. I'm saying this without conducting a study of my own, but I'd like to offer two thoughts. First, I have worked with Frank Elo, the former warden of that private prison. He was the warden for 5 years, and he worked in the state of Michigan's correction system for 30 years. He said that is absolutely not true. They ran the system better. I think one of the problems was the state was not providing it with the type of prisoners, the youth prisoners, that were expected to arrive when they designed this deal, when they put the deal together to have a privately run prison as a build-own-operate system. So even if the private company somehow failed to perform, you have to also say that the state failed to perform too, because the state is the one that put this deal together and said, we will send you X number of prisoners of an X number type, and apparently they did not. And that's why I think the cost numbers were able to come out showing that it was too expensive.
So So the state did it, but wanted to sabotage it, almost sounds like.
That may be the case, but again, I have not done my own study. What I would like to point out on a very micro level, that I have a new piece on my website called What Price Government, comparing public and private sector pay from a couple of different angles. And one of the anecdotal examples I use is comparing correctional officer pay and benefits with public sector corrections officers' pay and benefits. And it's quite extraordinary. Even at the pay level, it's fairly comparative, but once you get into the fringe benefits, you'd be surprised at how much better the state employees do. In fact, I learned from GEO that if they have an employee whose insurance costs $700 a month for his whole family, he has to pay half the premium every month. That's $350. By contrast, a state employee with a family of four on the state health plan would pay $63 a month, while the state would kick in $1,100 a month. So you can see what a wide gulf there is in overall compensation. That's one of the reasons that state government is so expensive. We run a very expensive bureaucracy, especially when it comes to the fringe benefits that we pay.
Well, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, you got to wonder, too, if part of that is that it goes right back to voting, because you've got a lot of people who work for the government, as you mentioned, more so than in manufacturing now. So if you start cutting government stuff, does that bring a lot of state workers to the polls that might and really get them enraged? So, I mean,
well, we have crossed the Rubicon, you might say, and the perfect example of how influential government employees are is the illegal teacher strike, where teachers all basically called in sick on the same day and went to Lansing to complain about charter schools that might be built in their city to compete with them. These are just alternative government schools, and that was more competition than they wanted to face. And the great tragedy here is those schools would have been financed privately by philanthropist Bob Thompson, who was going to spend $200 million of his own money building 15 new schools, but government employees couldn't stand the thought of competition.
Oh, heaven forbid.
No. So, in fact, the pay and benefits of public school teachers in Southeast Michigan actually is one of the highest in the country, and it was pointed out by the Wall Street Journal just last Friday in an op-ed. Here's one that's new. It did not appear in my old study. But
I'll tell you what, hold that thought just a second. Sure. Do you need to check weather on the O's real quick? It is 9:50. Let's take a look just real quick. 36 inches in parts of the UP around Lake Superior's shoreline, possible today in the night. Tomorrow, the rest of the area around 1 inch and a high of 17, and then scattered snow showers going to be all the way through Tuesday. Tonight's low of 6, tomorrow's average high of around 20. Mike LaFave is my guest from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Go ahead with that thought. I wanted to hear that.
Medicaid estate recovery. We are under a federal mandate, every state in the union, to implement a Medicaid estate recovery program, meaning that if people have been on Medicaid in their final years, the government can recover some of the money they spent on their health care by taking some of their estate in the form of a tax. Basically, they'll take some of the property that was still owned by the person who died. We're the only state in the union that is thumbing our nose at the federal government. If we actually implemented our own estate recovery plan, the state of Michigan could bring in an extra $85 million. But for some reason, we're ignoring a federal mandate.
I'm surprised that hasn't gotten more traction on the other side because of the people inheriting saying that, hey, you're taxing them even after they're dead. I'm surprised that hasn't got a hit.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that because the governor in her proposal is apparently going to try to decouple the estate tax. So what she's saying is we want to bring in more revenue from people who are wealthy and who die, but we're going to ignore this estate recovery for middle-class and upper-middle-class individuals who could also contribute an extra $85 million if we just adhered to federal law.
Interesting indeed. Is there penalties involved that we don't do that?
Apparently not. Otherwise, I think something would have been passed. Not that I know of. We do have a piece explaining this, a 700-word one, on our website. All you have to do is type in Medicaid estate recovery in our search engine, and it'll pop right up.
That sounds fair enough. We'll take a look at it. And speaking of that, what is your website? People can take a look.
www.mackinac.org.
We've got about a minute or a minute and a half left. What's one more thing that you want people to know about that the state should be considering cutting?
Well, on the Boulder front, I've actually recommended in writing that we privatize the University of Michigan. It could actually improve itself as a private institution and save us $300 million a year. Another area for schools to look at should they be facing cutbacks is competitive contracting in school districts. You know, only about 38% contract out for non-instructional services such as busing, food service, or janitorial. So much more in this area can be done because just contracting out one service can save up to $200 per student per year. So there's no reason to cry about money until these schools have looked to the private sector for more cost-effective and perhaps even better services like others have done.
That's some powerful stuff right there. And again, go to Mackinac.org, spelled with a C, and check it out for yourself. There's some good articles in there. As a matter of fact, Michael Fave has written some interesting ones, too, and we'll get a chance to see how this all plays out. This is going to be an interesting year. You're ready to get into the trenches, Mike.
I'm already there.
Sounds good. I'm sure we'll be talking again. I appreciate you spending some time with us today.
The pleasure was mine.
Good talking to you, sir.
Thank you.
Take care. That's Michael Fave at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy on 1270 WMKT.